Welcome to the second episode of All Things Crypto. It's an Elk Finance podcast. So I'm Shiloh,
And I'm Freed.
we're here to talk a little bit about DeFi.
Please keep in mind we are not financial advisors, and this is not a financial advice. If you're looking for financial advice, please find a licensed advisor in your area.
So our mission in the Elk Finance podcast is to provide resources to people who are kind of interested in crypto.
Today we are going to talk about liquidity with a focus on decentralized finance, DeFi, and what is liquidity, how we can benefit from it, and what you need to know.
So an important piece here is if we get something wrong, just let us know. We really welcome your feedback. We're here to learn and share some ideas. So with that said, let's get started.
Shiloh, what is liquidity in terms of cryptocurrency?
So liquidity is a broad term, and it's used also in in banks, right? The best way to think about liquidity is you walk into a bank. We're from Canada, right? And let's say we're going down to the States, so we need to have some money on hand. We need some US currency, but all we have is Canadian. So I go to the bank and I give them my Canadian dollars, and they do an exchange and they give me some US dollars. And of course, the US dollar's worth a little bit more, so I get a little bit quote unquote less US dollars when I leave. So liquidity, think of it as the cash on hand. And in terms of cryptocurrency, we can think of it as the amount of cryptocurrency, the amount of token, whatever token you're looking to buy or sell.
Whatever you can exchange.
Exactly. So they need a pool of it just in case you ask for a bunch, right? And the difference here is if they don't have a lot of liquidity, they're going to charge you more because they're on short supply,
That's right.
right? So, and also if they don't have much and you try to buy a lot, it's going to inflate the price, and we'll get into that a little bit. It's a little thing called price impact, and we'll get into that in a bit. But basically, think of it as the tokens on hand.
Something readily available and can be exchanged for a service or another token or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and especially to do with trading, right? You could talk about your own liquidity, I suppose, like how much liquid assets you have in terms of cryptocurrency. Of course, it's not a pool that people are buying and selling from. It's your own personal wallet. Unless, of course, you're a liquidity provider, which we will also get into a bit later.
Perfect. Those are the questions are going to come later. When you're looking at centralized exchange versus decentralized, can you explain to us how these centralized versus decentralized dealing with liquidity?
Yeah, so centralized exchanges function a lot like a bank. A company like Binance is a centralized exchange, or Coinbase, or exchanges like this, KuCoin, things like that. So what they have to have is a huge initial investment.
Ten
They
dollars.
10 more than 10, even more than $20.
Damn.
So it's up in that like millions and millions and millions of dollars to be able to do that, right? Because they need to acquire enough tokens from various projects that they're going to list so that you can trade them. They need that pool of tokens in case somebody goes on there and wants to buy them. So they're providing all of those tokens. They're providing all of that money that if you decide to take it out into your real bank cash, then you can take it out, right? They need to have that so that they can send it to your PayPal or your directly to your bank or whatever. So they have to have kind of all sides of it, which can be really expensive. Though they also get 100% of the profit. So, there's that, let's say a 0.5% fee on each trade. They're getting that 0.5% from each trade. And you can see that adding up pretty quick in terms of profit, but the initial investment is huge. Another thing to watch out for in a centralized exchange is looking at the amount of orders. So what an order is somebody's offer to buy or sell a currency. And on exchanges like the regular Coinbase, for example, you don't have to worry about it. It's just traded on the current value, and you don't have to worry about having a buyer. It'll just tell you the rate there. But on Binance, for example, if we do what's called a market order, somebody can put in, you know, I want to buy one Bitcoin for $10, and they could put that order in. It will never be initiated, at least no time in the near future. But they can put that order in, and a problem can happen on exchanges, centralized exchanges that aren't very big or popular. If there's no trading going on, people can set a price really low or high, especially if it's an obscure token. If I make Farid coin, and I
please do,
I know, right? Yeah. And I just throw out that couple million bucks to get listed on Binance or whatever it costs, and I put it on there. If nobody's trading it, if somebody can put an order in to buy at this level or to sell at this level until they have the seller has a matching buyer, or the buyer has a matching seller that does an order. It's kind of just that order's going to sit there. So you got to pay attention on, especially if you have to trade on those smaller centralized exchanges, that the price you're paying is going to be fair, right? So you want to check CoinGecko and see what the actual value is, or something like that, or CoinMarketCap.
That is very similar to what we see in a stock market.
That's right.
For limit orders.
Exactly.
I can put whatever I want, but at the end of the day, it has to get to a certain value. And after that, the order goes through.
Exactly. But
how about decentralized exchanges?
Yeah, so that's the cool part, and I'm a big fan of decentralized finance and how they do exchanges. There is no central bank. The cool part is, imagine if the bank kind of allowed each person to use their assets to be part of that trading pool that people could buy and sell from. So here, kind of what happens is you can become a liquidity provider. And this is how decentralized exchanges do it. There's no just like tokens just there. They're actually held by various people. I mean, to start, there will be a pool of tokens there that sit in the router. But to simplify it, if I have 1,000 ELK and I'm on AVAX, I can choose to provide AVAX ELK liquidity, for example, if I want. So I would then provide $1,000 at current market price of ELK and $1,000 of current market price of AVAX. They have to be equivalent, and I'll provide those into the pool. And those all, everyone's assets get pooled together into a big pool. And of course, they keep track of whose is whose. And which wallet put it in. So you can always see how much liquidity you provide. You put it in and you actually get some reward from being a liquidity provider. So then when somebody does a trade, they swap AVAX for ELK, let's say, or ELK for AVAX. It may borrow some of your ELK and some of your AVAX and give you some AVAX distributed amongst everyone proportional to your stake. And then allow them to quickly do the trade with low price impact, the more providers there are.
So you're telling me that is something like a co-op, that we generate our own co-op centralized system by providing our own liquidity.
Right. And so there's no one person who can kind of like, you know, unless they were providing 90% of the assets, you know, like people can kind of usually pull their pool back and take their tokens to use them for something else if they want without causing a big problem. So it relies on everybody together, exactly like a co-op, to come together and do that.
When you were explaining this decentralized, you mentioned 50-50, which is basically in the case of your example was $1,000 cash and $1,000 worth of AVAX.
Yeah.
Can you explain why is it 50-50?
Right. So whenever you're becoming a liquidity provider, you're going to provide value at the time. Like I said, if I was providing ELK AVAX, right? ELK and AVAX, because I knew people were going to trade those two things. I provide them an equal value, $1,000 worth of ELK and $1,000 worth of AVAX, so that because the pool always has to remain balanced. it wouldn't make any sense for there to be more AVAX than there is elk, or more elk than there is AVAX, because people need, we need to have like equal pricing and equal, you know, equal market value, so that if I decide to buy a bunch of elk, let's say, that's going to then decrease the amount of elk on hand, possibly slightly increase the amount of AVAX as well. Now, when I take from that pool of elk because I buy a bunch, that's what causes your price to go up. Because there's less available on that side of the pool. So elk becomes more valuable. And since your pool that you've provided always needs to stay even 50-50, that means you will actually have less elk and maybe a tiny bit more AVAX, depending on how far up the price of elk goes.
That is a very, very intelligent way of doing it, because you're trying to make sure that you don't introduce too much volatility in a market, and you keep it a balanced portfolio rather than just people exchanging one versus the other and just making printing money from thin air.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Which would cause inflation, right? So if we just minted tokens with no pool, it would just decrease the price of the token overall. And that's how you get a Zimbabwe situation.
I'm a billionaire in Zimbabwe. I have 2 billion Zimbabwean dollar at home, and I really don't know what I should do with it.
I'll spend it all on that half slice of bread.
I was planning to buy half an egg, but... You know what, this question, maybe it sounds dumb, but I just want to ask it, because is Bitcoin considered a liquid asset?
Yeah, so technically all cryptocurrencies are considered a liquid asset. The idea is that they can be traded instantly. And if you can't trade it one place, you can go somewhere else for a better rate. The whole purpose is to be extremely liquid and flexible. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we have to rely on those centralized exchanges in order to exchange it for cash. Or we can use the more decentralized things like Ramp, which allow us to go right from certain decentralized currencies to and projects and going right to cash.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was very interesting. Why is liquidity important?
Yeah, so... liquidity is important because, again, we need enough on hand to trade. Mm-hmm. Liquidity needs to be there, especially for those big buys. If I am, some billionaire with a pipe and I'm like, oh, today I want to buy 1,000 bitcoins because I'm rich and I want to be richer, as rich people do. I'm going to need that... whatever the exchange, decentralized or centralized, I'm going to need them to have that 1,000 Bitcoin on hand so that I can buy it. My price impact, in the grand scheme of things is going to be, not mind blowingly high, but I mean, if it's 1,000 Bitcoin, it's probably going to affect the whole market a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. So you're saying that lack of liquidity is inflationary.
Yes.
And it's very important always we have enough liquidity to basically meet the demand. Otherwise, we are going to have a chaos in hand and a kind of a massive fluctuations, either upward or downward.
True. And that can cause a difference on any particular exchange. So let's say if I go to, a decentralized exchange and I say, okay, I want to exchange... on Trader Joe, let's say, I want to exchange my AVAX for 1,000 Bitcoin. Now, it's possible, them being decentralized, they might not have 1,000 Bitcoin to give me. The thing is, it'll still let me buy it. But I'll get maybe the worst price imaginable because I'm trying to buy 1,000 Bitcoin at a decentralized exchange where they don't have it, right? So that price impact, Bitcoin on Trader Joe, is then going to be exorbitantly expensive. Because I would have taken 1,000 away, and or maybe I wouldn't have been able to. Maybe for the price of 1,000, I would have only got 500, mm-hmm. right? But the price of whatever remains is going to be exorbitantly high. So that's when people get into things called like arbitrage, where they use, they buy and sell on different exchanges for the best possible value. Often bots do this, but you can also do it manually. It's a great thing to do on Elk because we're on a few different chains, but maybe we'll get into that in another episode.
It sounds great. Actually, that is a very interesting thing, because my question is, if you're trying to go to multiple exchanges to withdraw a certain certain crypto, how would you know what is the real price?
Yeah, so that's tricky. Like, that's one handy piece of centralized exchanges or trackers. So if I go to CoinMarketCap, or I go to CoinGecko, or I use FTX or whatever to track the overall value of something, that can provide me a general guideline of how much I should be paying for each currency and what's the average fair market price. Now, like I said, there's going to be slight differences on all of the decentralized exchanges and centralized exchanges depending on the trade volume. Because if people are buying more of a token, the price is going to be higher there.
That's right.
Or if they're selling more of it, it's going to be lower. And that could differ a little bit from other exchanges. Now, I know that they have some protections in place so that that doesn't happen where your Bitcoin goes to $10 million per Bitcoin on one exchange. And then, it's still the normal 42,000 US somewhere else. I there is some attachment to what the price should be. Whereas it, in that case, it might be buying it costs a lot more, but selling it, you might get the market value.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is something we're definitely going to come back to, because this is a fascinating topic to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
What are the factors impacting the liquidity?
So lots of factors impact liquidity. So the first one, and the biggest one, especially on decentralized exchanges, is the amount of liquidity providers. If no one's providing liquidity for the token, we're relying on kind of what's sitting, in the pool in the exchange that hasn't been bought yet. That's the more liquidity providers, the deeper the liquidity. And so deep liquidity is really important, like I mentioned, because if you go to buy it and there's not enough, you're going to have a huge price impact. And it's going to cause the token to, if you're buying it, to go up in price, or selling it, you sell more than it's expecting, then it can even out with its pair, right? Mm-hmm. So you're selling AVAX for Elk, and you go ahead and you sell, a bunch of Elk, then you sell so much that it's going to be like a huge impact. It's going to decrease the price substantially for everybody else. And most Uniswap forks, Uniswap is a popular exchange on Ethereum. Most decentralized exchanges have taken their code from Uniswap because it works so well. So most of these decentralized exchanges will show you your price impact in percent. And you'll notice, like, okay, you see that you want to buy, 1,000 Elk, and each Elk is $1.09 US, let's say. So you're like, okay, so if each Elk is $1.09 and I want to buy 1,000 of them, that should cost me $1,090, mm-hmm. right? What it also takes into account is if you're buying it, with each Elk bought, it's going to increase the price. So you're actually going to get less than 1,090 Elk if, that amount substantially impacts the total liquidity in the exchange. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So with each Elk you buy, that increases the price slightly. And so it's got to account for that.
But if I'm a billionaire, let's assume for a minute that is...
Let's dream.
Yeah, that's possible. If I buy let's say in the case of Elk, I buy majority of the basically coins and I hoard them.
Right.
So in that case, it becomes inflationary. Isn't that the case?
That's right. If there is tokens, let's say locked, you're going to have a hard time buying a huge amount, especially because with each one you buy, it's going to increase the price. So if you bought like half of the circulating supply of Elk, please don't. But if you do, you're going to the thing people will notice is that the value goes up, and with each elk bought, you're going to spend a lot more than what half of all elk is worth now because you're driving the price up with each one bought, right? So it's going to have like a
That's my plan, actually. I'm just trying to.
as long
Hopefully,
as you
there is
hold
a
it.
billionaire out there who is listening to this podcast and he just wants to do it.
As long as you hold it, if you dump
Yeah.
on it,
Please
I'll
don't
get you.
dump it. Just buy it and hoard it and lock it and just don't think about
So if you buy it and hold
it.
it, in terms of tokenomics, that's and like you're the majority holder, you're gonna, the price isn't gonna fluctuate too much if you've got the majority stake and you're not selling.
But that person is going to be like a central bank.
Yeah, they could, well.
Today, I want it to be this price.
Right, they could, and they could provide liquidity, right, and provide the majority of liquidity, and so yeah, lots of different ways to kind of think about it, right? The great thing about being a liquidity provider, as I mentioned earlier, is you'll get a certain percentage of each trade back. So every time somebody trades your pair, I'm saying, let's say I'm providing USDC, a US stable coin, and ELK. Let's say I'm providing $1,000 of, total liquidity. So $500 USDC and $500 ELK. And, I'm going to get a small amount of each trade. Now, when you're trading, you're going to pay like a small fee in ELK, let's say on our exchange. And that fee is going to be distributed equally, proportionally among everyone providing liquidity. So if I'm providing $1,000 of liquidity, and everyone else total is providing, let's say a total for the easy math, $10,000 total is provided, and I'm providing $1,000, I would then get 10% of each trade done between that pair. Now, so I've got to wait for someone to trade USDC and ELK specifically, and then I will get my share based on the other people providing the remaining $9,000 of USDC ELK. So when they're exchanging that, you get a small percentage. Same thing with other pairs, and it's pair specific. So whenever, and you'll notice sometimes we have these things called smart routers on decentralized exchanges. It's really complex, but it'll route through, it'll do a couple different exchanges if it gets you a better price. So if I want to exchange USDC for ELK, but there's actually more liquidity in USDT ELK, what it might do is, it might exchange, and I'm buying, let's say I'm buying ELK with USDC. So I'll shoot that transaction through, and it'll actually first perhaps convert it to USDT and a different US stablecoin, and then it will buy ELK after that. Because let's say there was more USDT ELK liquidity, and it would have been maybe a better deal. So it could do that, right? And it might even do it through three or four different tokens, depending on how obscure it is, if that gets you the best deal.
This is something very fascinating, because for listeners who are doing investment outside of the crypto world, you have to remember that the returns we're getting on the stocks or all the equities out there are significantly lower than the numbers we are getting in crypto. Of course, the risk is higher, but as a result of the risk you're taking, your rewards are higher. We're going to talk about this concept a lot more in upcoming episodes because this is the part which everybody's, I guess, very excited about, very interested about. Let's go back to clarifying one thing before moving on to the next question. So, based on the conversation we have, does more trading volume means more liquidity?
Oh, that's a good question. So, more trading volume doesn't actually mean any more liquidity. It means more rewards for liquidity providers. So, if more people are making trades, it doesn't actually increase the pool to trade from. It might on one side or the other, but remember, it's always relatively equal.
That's right.
So, it's and if you sell a bunch of the token, you're gonna just deflate the value on one side. It's always got to be even. So the amount of token and the price always have to be at the right level so that they're even. So if I sell a bunch of a token, it's worth less because the supply that the liquidity providers are holding has increased.
Mm-hmm.
Supply and demand.
Oh, okay. That's a very interesting thing, you know, because everybody's just like, oh, look at the numbers are going up. And can you lose profit in a liquidity market?
Yes, you can. So it's something called impermanent loss. And I actually want to do an entire episode at some point on impermanent loss because it's complicated and it's hard to understand. But the basics here
is 30 seconds.
It's 30 seconds. I'll do my best, right? Okay. So impermanent loss happens when the value of one token in a liquidity pair increases or decreases in relation to the other token.
Okay.
So remember when I provided USDC ELK liquidity for people to trade those two?
That's right.
Let's say ELK hits the moon. ELK goes to $100 per token,
mm-hmm.
US. And previously it was at, let's say, $1, right? So, and USDC, that it's always going to be $1-ish, right? Basically.
That's right.
So it hasn't changed value. So if ELK goes to $100, what's going to happen if you're a liquidity provider is, let's say you provided, at the time, 500 ELK, 500 USDC, mm-hmm. and they were even. The value of ELK skyrockets to, $100. What's going to happen is you'll actually get less ELK and more USDC. The value overall of what you have will increase for sure. You won't lose money. So it's not loss in the traditional sense. So if you started with 500 US dollars and 500 ELK, and then ELK went to $100, you would have less ELK and more USDC, and it would be equal amounts still. So it's always got to be even. So you'll definitely have less ELK than you started with, because if you started with 500, that would have meant you had, by the end of it, $50,000 US. But it doesn't quite work that way, because your pair has to be equal. So impermanent loss refers to the difference between if you just held those two tokens separately, their worth, versus providing them together. And with impermanent loss, you just wouldn't get as much as you otherwise would if you were providing liquidity. So if the price of a token is varying wildly, shooting up and going down and, really volatile, it's going to be kind of more risky to provide liquidity because you might experience impermanent loss because the relation of one token to the other is going to change constantly. Right.
I promise the listeners we're going to come back to that, because that is a fascinating story, because that is something which I don't know what is the best way to go forward. But that example, it gave me a little bit of an idea about how things going to work together in a way that you're going to get a massive loss and you're not going to really realize all the gain a token can have.
Yeah, absolutely. And ELK has something called impermanent loss protection, where we pay you back in ELK what you would have lost if you were holding those separately. So definitely check that out. It's not something that's very common in the crypto world, but just thought I'd shill that for a second.
I don't want to advertise for any special token here, but that is a fascinating feature, I tell you that. The other question I wanted to ask is, what to consider when we are choosing to provide liquidity?
So we're going to have to look at what kind of rates that the particular protocol is giving. Is it worth it? Is it worth the risk? If you're providing liquidity and getting 1% a year in crypto, that's probably not a great deal.
No, right? Don't do it.
Don't do it. We're going to look at market depth. It could be that you found a relatively a token that you believe in and there's no liquidity yet, and you can be one of the first pools and you could soak up a lot of those initial transactions if you wanted. But keep in mind, if you're one of the first people providing liquidity, the price of that token is going to probably vary wildly because it's new. So you got to be careful. It's You're gonna want to look at pricing, right? How much is the token worth? How much has it varied over time? If it's, again, like I said, volatile, it might be worth reconsidering providing liquidity if you're not ready for the risk of the volatility. If it's more stable, then it's probably a little bit safer of a bet, but you can never be sure. Crypto is, by its nature, volatile, right? So that's where we're gonna go look at the particular token. We're gonna check all of the feeds we can find on it. We're going to research the token. We're gonna find their Telegram, maybe chat with them. Do your own research. That's really important here, and make sure that they've been, as best you can. If you're worried about that sort of thing, make sure they've been audited and they have they're a safe project, because you don't want to be getting rugged, especially after you lend your liquidity to that. So make sure you're being safe.
So the same as any other investment,
That's
you
right.
have to do the work.
Yes, and never afford to invest. Never invest any more than you can afford to lose.
That is a very important point, because a lot of people hear these stories that somebody made 1,000% in a matter of a week or two, and it's
Yeah.
just like that return trumps anything you can get from the stock exchange. But you have to remember, as Charlotte mentioned, there is so much volatility here, and you should have definitely a good idea about what you want, what you're dealing with. Otherwise, you can just lose your shirt here.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, interesting. The other question I have is, what is in it for my wallet?
Yeah. What's in it for gains, right? And so, being a liquidity provider, you're entitled to that little fee for everyone's swaps. So if that fee is worth it for you, there you go. A lot of decentralized exchanges do what's called farming, and we're going to do another episode just on farming. But that's basically where you get some tokens called the liquidity pool tokens that represent your share of that pool of those two tokens that you're providing. And some exchanges, decentralized exchanges, offer you what's called a farm, and that's where you put them, put that those liquidity tokens in a farm, and you get a little bit of an extra reward for being a liquidity provider proportional to your share of the pool. So that's where they would usually give you unreleased tokens as reward on top of those trading fees. But again, it's totally worth its own episode, but that's called farming. So that can be a really lucrative part of being a liquidity provider.
Oh, you know what? As an idiot who never had that much experience with crypto, I have done a little bit of that, and it's really amazing how much return you can get from these forums. And I promise the listeners, I will definitely force Shiloh to have one episode dedicated to the forums.
Yeah, it's definitely my favorite thing too.
Love it.
It ain't much, but it's honest work. But yeah, that's farming. So I think that's it for this second episode of All Things Crypto and Elk Finance Podcast. And thanks everybody for listening. It was a lot of fun to chat about. Please, if you're interested in more or have some feedback for us, check out Elk's Telegram. That's t.me/elk_finance_chat, and that will get you to our Telegram chat. And just let me know. LT Snake Plissken is my username. If you've got any feedback, and I can pass that on to Fareed as well.
Absolutely. No question is stupid. So just ask any question comes to your mind. And if we can answer it, perfect. And if we can't answer it, we find somebody who can answer it for you.
Absolutely. So the Elk team is a helpful bunch. So I'm sure if we don't get to it, somebody will too.
Yeah,
So,
these dudes are kind. Cheers.
all right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.